This is episode 274 of the Prepper Website Podcast, where I connect you with resources that will help you live a more self-reliant life. Today's articles are 9 ways to beat the food rationing system when it happens again, and the importance of OPSEC in your survival plans. Hey, I'm Todd Sepulveda, the editor of PrepperWebsite.com. This podcast is an audible version with some commentary of articles that have been posted on Prepper Website, a daily curation of preparedness information. These articles are some of the best that have been recently posted on PrepperWebsite.com. All article links and show information can be found on the PrepperWebsitePodcast.com. Well, hello everyone and welcome to episode 274. Hey, you know, last night as I was putting the last finishing touches on episode 273, I went over to Twitter and saw that there was another bombing in Austin. And so it's crazy. It's like number 4. So I don't know if you are familiar with it, but someone's been placing bombs all over Austin. And so they think it might be the same person. There's some similarities to all the different bombs. But if you're interested in it, there are articles over on Drudge Report that you can go click on. This last one hurt 2 people, but so they went to the hospital. But it didn't kill them. But who knows, with someone, you know, getting this much attention, and they could start making bigger bombs and going that way. I think they said this one was a little bit more sophisticated than the other ones that had gone off. So anyway, it just lets you know how crazy it is out there. And this isn't the first time that something like this has happened, you know, in America. But it just lets you know how crazy it is with all the other things going on. And it also tells you, with all the other things going on, that this probably doesn't get all the attention that it would have in the past, you know. That's another tell sign of how crazy things are. But anyway, you can go check out that information if you want, or those news stories on Drudge Report. And again, they're all over Twitter and stuff like that. So, hey, if you are listening to this podcast and you are not subscribed, I'm going to welcome you to go over to iTunes, Stitcher, or any other podcast network. And that way you never miss another episode of the Prepper Website Podcast. And we want you to stay prepped and aware, definitely. So let's go ahead and jump into our first article of the podcast. It comes to us from livinglifeinruraliowa.com. And the article is entitled 9 Ways to Beat the Food Rationing System When It Happens Again. So some great ideas here and some ways to be prepared and to prep your food storage. So let's go ahead and start reading. Right now, food seems to be plentiful in America. There's plenty of it in the stores, and you hear stories of how much food is wasted from restaurants and grocery stores. However, there are some factors that could lead us to a rationing system in a hurry if something happened. Those things do not even have to be catastrophic for us to be rationed. In most natural disasters, such as hurricanes and flooding, Red Cross and FEMA dive right in to help. However, they will only serve meals and or give out limited amounts of food and water. Yes, many other people donate food and money when things like this happen, but what if they couldn't? So let me just stop right there. You know, definitely, I think Americans are very, very good at coming to the rescue of other people. And the people of Houston and the people of the Gulf Coast and even Louisiana, I mean, they saw that with Hurricane Harvey and how people came, you know, from like I said, from Louisiana, they came from all over to help. And there's still people, you know, we were talking about that this Sunday at church with one of our members, how it's so easy for us to have moved on, but there are so many people that are still, you know, their houses are completely done for, right? My supervisor lives in a neighborhood where the people own their home outright, and so they basically closed the door. They closed the door and left, and they've got the insurance check, right? So theoretically, I mean, they don't own a mortgage or anything like that. They don't have to pay for the house anymore. They don't have to pay to get it repaired. They just kind of closed the door and left. Another family did that as well. The only difference is that family actually mucked it out, right? So they cut out all the wet cardboard and, or not cardboard, all the sheetrock and, you know, all the floors and all those kinds of things so the house could dry out a little bit. But then they went ahead and left the way that it was. And so it's kind of still looking very junky, and the neighborhood doesn't like that. And so everybody's concerned about the property values and all this other kind of stuff. But this other home where the homeowner just left, I mean, they've got mold in there. They've got all kind. I mean, it is a bad, bad deal. And so people are concerned about, you know, getting sick because of all the mold that would be in the air and going up into the air and stuff like that. Because just the mold sets in really, really quickly when you're in that kind of situation. But we saw an outpouring of people. I mean, churches came out, people came out. You heard maybe about the Louisiana, the Cajun Navy came out, Texas, the Texas Navy. And there was a lot of people. If people would have had to wait for first responders, it would have taken so much longer. This was regular people being able to help. The problem is, and then so let me not only help with mucking out and all those kinds of things, but supplies and food, and there were just so many great outpourings of love out there. But if you were in a situation where it was a really big impact, like the whole nation was impacted, so there's not going to be, you know, the government's not going to be there. There's not going to be that outpouring of support from everybody or from other states or things like that. It's going to be a bad, bad deal, right? So even if the government did come in, they're going to be very, very limited. All right, so let's go ahead and go on. In World War I, the Americans were not put on a rationing system, but were asked to eat more fresh fruits and vegetables and less meat and wheat products. In World War II, Americans were put on a rationing system that became stricter as the war went on. Even then, this country imported a lot of food and supply chains were disrupted. In addition to that, the troops needed food overseas that would ship and travel well. We were asked to give up or limit certain foods to feed our troops, which we did because we were patriotic and felt it was our duty to do so. Certain foods were not available because they were not in season or able to grow in the United States. In today's America, this seems like a foreign concept. Food is literally everywhere. However, we have situations that can happen that starts to have our food ration. Most grocery stores have only 3 days of food on their shelves in their storage rooms. If a blizzard or some other weather storm happens, those shelves will be wiped out in hours. Our local grocery stores can be very short on supplies on Sunday because a lot of people get groceries on Sundays. Now imagine if there is a disruption in the transportation system. No trucks bringing food to the stores means a limited supply or no food to buy. Imagine if we went to war again. A good deal of our food or ingredients for our food is imported. Less food coming into our country means less food to buy. That will not go over well with some people. Imagine if you could not actually get to the grocery store. Some people were accustomed to shopping every day instead of once a week or 2 weeks. When food is rationed, often gas and tires are rationed too, which will stop someone from going to the store every day. Food will start to be rationed, and just like when food was rationed before, there will be a learning curve. People will have to adjust, and some people will not adjust well. People have to learn how to cook again and grow their own food. Some of those skills are completely lost in our inner cities. Hey, so one of the things is that, you know, she brought up inner cities just now, but, you know, people back in World War I and World War II, they still had gardens, and definitely in World War I, it was a lot more agricultural, but you know, even in World War II, people still had those gardens, and you always hear about, especially in the preparedness community. If you've been in the preparedness community for a little while, you might have heard the term victory gardens, which comes back from World War II, where everyone was encouraged to, you know, do their own garden, make their own garden, and that was your duty, your patriotic duty, and all that good stuff. And really, it was a way that everybody should live anyway, right? But we are very, very far removed from that. You have kids. You know, luckily, the school that I was an assistant principal at, we had a gardening program. So our third graders got to go out there. They got to put seed in the ground. They got to pull carrots. They got to see where, you know, fruits and vegetables came from. They got to eat it. So they got to experience all that. But there's people who think, you know, they think, hey, vegetables and fruit, and they automatically assume the grocery store, which that's where we go get it right now. but not thinking of, hey, if it's not there, what am I going to do? You know? And so you got to put some seed into the ground, and there is a big, big learning curve when it comes to that. And so food is very, very important. Actually, food was the topic, and I'm just going to digress here just for a second. Food was the topic of my Facebook Live last Thursday, and talked a little bit about an easy food storage solution. And so what I do or what I did was I brought that video down from Facebook and I edited it down to where it was just the good stuff, and I uploaded that on YouTube. And so I have it linked in the show notes. Well, I will link it in the show notes. And so it's like your easy food storage guide. And so if you are new to preparedness, or even if you, you're not new to food to preparedness, but you want have a good food storage solution, I'm going to invite you to go check this out. We'll talk about canned foods and just kind of walk you through some of those things. So I'd love for you to go and check out that video. You can show me a great kindness by watching that video and also liking it and subscribing to the YouTube channel. So I just wanted to kind of throw that out there. If you're interested, and like I said, it'll be in the show notes. But let's go ahead and continue on, because she covers these nine ways to help your food storage situation. And so she's saying here, what can you do to beat the rationing system if this happens again? So number one is food storage. Now more than ever, you need to have a food stockpile. No one knows how long food would be rationed for. No one planned for World War II to last for 4 years. There are still people recovering from the hurricane last season. Puerto Rico is still getting on their feet and depending on FEMA and donations to feed their people as of this post. Having a food stockpile is critical, and having a year's worth of food is not out of the line. Number two is grow your own food. You will have to become your own supplier. If you start gardening now, you will have the skills to grow your own food. You don't even need a garden per se, but it is better to have a plot of land to grow food. However, you can use containers, grow lettuce and spinach in pots inside the house, grow tomatoes on the balcony or the patio. There are many creative ways to grow your food. Number three is raise your eggs and meat. If you can, have some laying hens for eggs, grow a few meat chickens for your own pot and freezer. If you can, raise more than chickens. Ducks, geese, turkey, pigs, goats, sheep, and cows can all be raised for butchering. You would be addressing one area of food that was also severely rationed by the end of World War II and probably would be again. Now, I'm going to let you know, if you have just a little bit of a backyard, you can easily do rabbits. And rabbits, if you're doing a garden, on the other little plot, you can easily use all that rabbit poop. It's such a good use of their waste. And you can use it directly into your garden. Of course, you don't want to overdo it, but that is very, very valuable there. But you can easily do chickens as well. And if you have a little bit more land, half an acre, even an acre, you can do it. I had chickens in my backyard. They were a little noisy at times, but it didn't require a lot of attention. And when they weren't a little noisy, you do give them a little bit of attention, and they settle down pretty quickly. But I just tell you, it was a great experience, and I would love to be able to have a little bit more property. I would definitely have chickens and rabbits, and I would definitely be doing that. It does not take a long time to take care of them. So if you do have that and you've never done it, then I'm going to encourage you to look into it. We have tons of articles on Prepper website that can help you along and get you started on all that. So, definitely consider that. Number four is foraging for food. You should learn to identify weeds and other edibles that can be cooked or eaten in a salad. This was done during both World War I and World War II with excellent results. A great book for foraging and identifying edibles is The Forager's Harvest, A Guide to Identify, Harvesting, and Preparing Edible Wild Plants by Samuel Thayer. Learning how to tap trees for syrup and collecting nuts should be skills to learn now, too. Hey, that book is a really great book. I've talked about the Idiot's Guide to Foraging something along those lines, right? Because I know the author. He's here in the Houston area, Merriweather, right? That's his, like, the name that he goes by when he's doing his forging and stuff like that. But anyway, and his classes, he gives classes in the Houston area if you're interested at the Houston Arboretum. But he has a great, and actually he was, when I asked him for some recommendations on books, Thayer's book is one of the ones that he suggested. Actually, all of Thayer's books. I mean, he gave me one or two that were really, really good that I should get. But then now that he has his own book, it's a great book that you should really definitely look into. I'm gonna stop the podcast, stop recording, because I want to go find the name of that so I can tell you the right name. All right, through the magic of the pause button, I was able to go to Amazon really quickly and look this up. It is called The Idiot's Guide to Foraging, and the author is Mark Vorderbruggen. And again, he goes by Merriweather. I don't know if he has like Mark Merriweather on the front cover there. But it's a great book. It is 5 stars and 120 customer reviews. So really great book. He does he runs the site Foraging Texas. So he's got a lot of great stuff there. But anyway, if you're into foraging, that's definitely a book that you need to have and add to your collection. Both Samuel Thayer's book and Mark's book, you need to go check that out. And so if you go over to Living Life in Rural Iowa, you can link to Amazon and get Samuel Thayer's book there. All right, number 5 is start keeping bees. Sugar was severely rationed in World War II. People are even more addicted to it now than they were then. Keeping bees and producing your own honey would easily help replace sugar, or at least keep sugar for more important things. During the war, people would save their sugar for the holidays or very special occasions. They would do without sugar most of the time. We all could benefit from having less sugar in our diets, too. I would love to keep bees. That would be one of the ultimate things for me to do. I'd love to be able to do that. We love honey. Thank goodness we have a source here close to us. Another thing is, if you're able to do it, sugarcane. I've never really looked too much into it, but it shouldn't be that hard. I mean, from what I've done on Prepper website, to be able to do it. And I've even thought about if I can do it in a way to the hogs, the wild hogs don't dig it up. It's really amazing. When we went up there a couple of years ago, when we first got the property, I went ahead and just kind of dug up and I just threw some seed down and wanted to see what would happen. And the next morning, I went to go water, and it was dug up. So, you know, whatever animals, I guess, saw the fresh dirt moved or you know, realized that it was moved, they came in and took care of it. But now there's, from time to time, we get wild hogs on there. We need to make sure that, I guess, it's buried or it's in a way where they can't get to it. Maybe fenced off is the way to do that. All right, number 6 is learn to preserve your own food. Learning to can and dehydrate will become very important skills during a food rationing time. Again, this is a skill you need to learn and practice now. Start simple with jams and jellies and work your way up to making meals in a jar. Getting a good supply of canning jars and canning lids will be crucial too. Metal for those lids could be in short supply. There is non-metal lids to can with also, but they also take time to learn how to use. So I believe she's mentioning the Tadler lids there. I remember one of Mark Goodwin's books where they were looking for canning lids because they were trying to preserve food. So definitely you want to have plenty of those if you're going to get into canning. Number 7 is learn to use everything and waste nothing. We can be a very wasteful society nowadays, and we really need to learn to use it all up. We need to learn to eat everything, repurpose leftovers, compost scraps, and feed scraps to the animals. Definitely agree with that one. Number 8 is get creative. You will have to learn to cook from scratch. You will have to learn how to use food in ways you never imagined. You will have to learn to eat more locally and seasonally. You may have to have odd food combinations at the supper table. Learn to be creative with food and keep an open mind about how to cook and use food. Number 9 is try new foods now. Never had turnip or rutabagas? They grow just about everywhere, so now would be a good time to learn how to eat them. They are just examples, but learn how to prepare and eat new things, especially vegetables. People ate better on the rationing system when they had vegetables available to them. learn to eat more vegetables, and figure out a way for your picky eaters to eat them too. Rationing is never an easy thing, but you can learn to use it to your advantage. If you take steps now to learn these skills and start storing food, you'll have an easier time living on a food rationing system. And there's just not the possibility of, you know, war causing this or just disruption, but just the fact that people might be getting into hard times. And I think people are already there. You know, a lot of people are. I went to the grocery store and bought just a few items, and I'm like, are you kidding me? You know, and so jokingly I said, man, with all small items I'm paying this much, and of course the cash register, so I just ring it up, you know, and I'm like, yeah, you're killing me. And but that's definitely a way to save some money. You can do it that way, and a lot of good things come from that as well. Hey, speaking of food storage, if you have never really thought about using 5-gallon buckets and Mylar bags and oxygen absorbers to put away like rice and beans and other food items like that, hey, I'm going to encourage you to come to Facebook on Thursday, Facebook Live on Thursday at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time. I'm going to be talking about that on the Facebook Live about using 5-gallon drums and with Mylar bags and with oxygen absorbers. And so I'm going to be walking you through those steps. I'm not actually going to be doing it, but I'm going to be walking you through the steps. And so to help you to make you feel a little bit more comfortable doing it, because I know that when I did it for the very first time, it's kind of weird, kind of scary. And, I was bouncing off one or two articles that I was able to find at that time. Now there's a lot of articles, but definitely want to offer that. So if you can make it on Thursday nights at 8 o'clock for the Facebook Live, and then even if you can't make it, it will be recorded, and so you can come check it out, you know, the next day or two if you like. Well, let me just say again, that article was over at livinglifeinruraliowa.com. Definitely you want to go check those out. All right, our next article is coming to us from a new website, actually. It's called twowayradiotalk.com. And they specialize in more like techie stuff and ham radios, but they also do some survival and preparedness articles as well. And so again, twowayradiotalk.com. I'd like to welcome them to the podcast. And then the name of their article is The Importance of OPSEC in Your Survival Plans. So let's go ahead and jump right into this one. Nobody knows the exact figure, but preppers account for only 1-2% of our population. Putting that in perspective, if you were to start looking around your neighborhood, trying to find another prepper, you'd have to investigate somewhere between 50 and 100 houses before finding one other family that believes enough in being prepared for a disaster to actually do something about it. Put another way, that means that somewhere between 50 and 100 of the families living around you are going to be in serious trouble if a disaster happens. After 3 days, they won't have any food in the house, will be out of water, and will be starting to get desperate. Grocery stores, which only stock 3 days' worth of food, will be empty. Looters will be trying to get what they want. People will be begging on the streets, and some will even go so far as to resort to violence in order to get food for their families. That's just after 3 days. From there, things will just get worse, as people become more and more desperate. You can pretty much count on people knocking on your door, looking for food and water, on the off chance that you have some. If they already know that you have food in your house, there will be a whole lot more of them showing up. While some of the people who show up at your door will be random people who will be going door to door, seeing what they can find, you can also count on friends, neighbors, and family members who know that you are prepared. They'll probably be the first ones to show up, and they'll be the hardest to turn away. Turning away someone you don't know is one thing. Turning away someone you love is a whole different ballgame. That's why it's so important to keep your preparations a secret. The more people who know that you are prepared for a disaster, the more who will come knocking on your door. Keeping such a secret is called OPSEC, a military acronym for Operational Security, which applies perfectly to our needs. In the military, OPSEC is about keeping the enemy from knowing your plans and capabilities. The big difference there is that the enemy is actively seeking that information. You have the advantage that other than nosy friends and neighbors, you're unlikely to run across people who are actively seeking to find out if you are prepping. Rather, it will be the casual curiosity of friends and neighbors that you must protect from. For our purposes, OPSEC can be broken down into two general areas: those things we do to hide our preparations, and those things we do in the wake of a disaster to hide the fact that we're better off than everyone else. So let's take a look at both. OPSEC while prepping. We've got to face it. Many of the things that we do as preppers would arouse the curiosity of anyone who sees them. So the key is to not let them see what we are doing. There are a number of simple measures we can take which will make it easier to hide what we are doing. When buying large quantities of food or other supplies, don't unload them with your vehicle parked in the driveway. Rather, pull it into the garage or backyard to unload where it is out of sight. If you are receiving deliveries of supplies, you are better off receiving a number of small deliveries rather than one large one. We all receive small deliveries from buying online, but few people receive a couple of pallets loaded with food buckets. Store your stockpile where it can't be seen. If you have a basement, that's an ideal location. If you're using a room as a pantry, keep the door closed. Water is hard to hide, especially the huge amounts needed for survival, but you can hide it in plain sight by installing an above-ground swimming pool in your backyard. Any measures you take to make your home more defendable should be hidden. If they can't be hidden, make them decorative to hide their true purpose. A hedge works just as well as a fence to keep people out of your yard, especially if you use a thorny bush and it doesn't look like a defensive perimeter. Don't be obvious about your guns, unless you live in an area where others are obvious about theirs. If you live in Texas, for example, you can always talk about carrying concealed or hunting, because others do so too, but you can't do that in New York or California. Always assume that someone is going to see what you are doing, so you want to make what you are doing as uninteresting as possible, preferably looking like something normal. That way, it won't attract attention. Hey guys, let me go up here and talk about one thing really quick. And I really haven't heard too much about this. It's been a long, long time. I think I only heard one, maybe it was one video that I heard someone discussing this about swimming pools. So if you take swimming pool water, which is chlorinated, and you're putting chemicals in there and all that kind of stuff, and you're planning on using that for drinking or cooking or hygiene, I think you might really need to reconsider that. There's you would be putting that that water through your water filters, and it would degrade your water filter very, very quickly. And then some of you might have a salt pool. For instance, I have a salt pool. And my dad was in the pool business, so it's not something that I purchased or whatever. We were very lucky. He had a lot of favors to call in, and he does not have a backyard. So he gave us the gift of a pool back in the day. So we have a lot of water that we can draw from, but that salt water, it's a salt water pool, will ruin the filters as well. And so I know that I was talking to someone recently who didn't realize that I prep. And they were talking about, you know, this was like after Hurricane Harvey and stuff. And she was talking about that they had water filters and they had their pool. And I'm like, I don't think you really want to put the water from your pool through your filter. You know, it'll ruin it very, very quickly. And she was like, no, it wouldn't. And I was just like, no, really, no, it wouldn't. I'm like, I don't know how much you've actually done, you know, the research on that. So anyway, that's just something that you really need to think about. You definitely, I would be using that water to flush. You know, some people might consider distilling water that comes from the pool. When you do that, you have to have a heat source, and you're using a lot of heat to boil off the water and leaving the impurities behind, and sending the steam out in a way that you could capture it. And then, you know, you've got all the leftover mess, you know, in whatever you're using. That's a possibility to do that, I guess, if it was very, very extreme and you had a lot of wood that you could burn. But, you know, just really consider that. He's going to talk a little bit more about the pool here in just a minute. And that's not really a good viable solution. Use it to flush your toilets, those types of things. You might even be able to get away with some hygiene aspects of it, you know, if you're like wetting down your body possibly, but you know, wiping down your body, whatever. But I would not try to use it for cooking and cleaning and those types of things. It would really ruin your water filter. And so I'll try to find a little bit more research on that and share it with you in a future podcast. So I'll be looking for that. All right, so let's go ahead and move on. Deception is part of OPSEC. There are times when you can't hide what you are doing. In those cases, it is best to make your neighbors think that you have another reason for doing it. I mentioned using a swimming pool to store water a moment ago. That's the kind of deception I'm talking about. As a retired engineer, I've let my neighbors and friends know that I like to tinker. So when they see me putting up a wind turbine or putting solar panels on my roof, they just chalk it up to more tinkering. I even talk about those projects not from a prepping standpoint, but as experiments. Another way I've used deception is to explain things like the water tank on my back porch. The 250-gallon tank is a little hard to hide, so I've told neighbors that it's there for my garden. I mix chemicals in the tank for watering my garden, helping me to fertilize the garden and water it at the same time. OPSEC during a disaster. The harder part of OPSEC is what you need to do in the wake of a disaster. Everyone is going to be on the lookout for people who are better off than they are, hoping to get something from them. So you have to hide the fact that you are better off. Be careful about food smells while cooking. Hungry people are more attuned to that than we normally are. So be very aware of what sorts of smells are wafting out from your fire pit. Light is a definite giveaway that you are better off than anyone else. If you are going to use any sort of lighting at night, be sure to use strict light discipline and blackout curtains over the windows. If anyone has to go outside, extinguish the lights before opening the door. People will be dirty due to a lack of water, so don't allow yourself to appear overly clean. A little dirt on your clothing and face will help you blend in. Wearing a hat can hide the fact that your hair is clean. People will also be losing weight due to the lack of food, so the worst thing you can do is to be chubby. Unless you're already thin, put yourself on a very restrictive diet so that you lose weight also. That will be better for your health anyway and help your supplies last longer. The world will be much quieter than it is now due to the lack of activity. So if you are using radios, televisions, or other electronics, keep the volume low or use headphones so that your neighbors don't hear it. Some things can't be hidden, like a garden or animals. You'll need to protect these. If you have them before the disaster hits, they will at least seem normal to your neighbors. But if you have never had a garden before and plant one after the disaster strikes, that will stand out to your neighbors. You know, I've said it before that, you know, this is implying that a disaster has happened and you are just, you know, you're hunkering down in your house and you're not really going out. And when you do go out, you're making yourself look like everyone else. I've said it before, my plan is going to be a little bit different than this. If there was a real poop hit the fan, let's say EMP or whatever, you know, for the sake of this conversation, I'm going to go out and I'm going to muster my community together. I'm going to go and I'm going to be talking about what we need to do and how we need to provide security, what we need to start doing about pulling up our yards and gardening and sanitation and all those types of things. Because, you know, the last thing you want is every man for themselves not pulling all together, because that's what it's going to wind up taking. So I have a little bit of different take on that. That's what I definitely, you know, that's where I would be headed. Now, that's not to say that I don't believe in OPSEC, and that's not to say that I don't believe that some of these things, what this article is saying, are very important, and you should be thinking about these things and ways to implement these things. All right, so the next topic is children in OPSEC. So children can't keep a secret no matter what, especially small children. So you'll need to hide what you're doing from your own children as well. Don't talk about prepping, building a stockpile, or surviving a disaster in front of them. They're much too likely to repeat that to someone else. At the same time, there's a lot of things that children just take for granted, thinking that they are normal. If you have a room full of food in your house and don't talk about it like it's something special, they'll think that everyone has a room full of food in their house too. So it won't be a secret and probably won't be mentioned to anyone else. Let me just, you really got to think about your own kids and what they're capable of doing, and you know, what secrets they're capable of holding, and then also at what age you're able to start talking to them about this. You definitely, you know, you want to be careful about, you know, what you're saying and those types of things, because kids are, you know, being a teacher in elementary, kids would say all types of things. I remember there was a little girl during Dare Week. We had some DEA agents coming and talking to us about, or talking to the whole group about how bad drugs were. And this little girl was in fourth grade, and she was a smart little girl. We're talking about how bad drugs were and all that kind of stuff. And so she, you know, when they were answering questions, she raised her hand. She said, "My dad smokes weed, and how can I help him stop?" You know, and so it was really a heartfelt and really, you know, one of those things. But she threw it out there from the whole grade level, in front of, you know, teachers, in front of DEA agents, right? And so you know, you really got to think about at what point are they able to handle this information. All right, so continuing on, deception works well with kids too. The same swimming pool idea will hide your water stockpile from your own children, just as it will from others. You can also be deceptive about training them in survival skills, teaching them as camping skills. They don't have to know you have an ulterior motive in teaching them those things. As your children get older, you can trust them with more knowledge about what you are doing. That's good because they will notice more anyway. But even teens have trouble keeping things a secret, so be careful about how much detail they know about your survival plans. So, good article here. I don't think I've read an article recently completely on OPSEC and some of the things that, you know, you should consider when you're prepping and those types of things. You know, I have a little bit different take on all this, and you know it. I've shared it with you multiple times, but I do believe that a degree of OPSEC is important, no matter what, you know, what place you hold in your views. So, you know, you do need to be thinking about that. It kind of needs to be in the back of your head. There's some reasons why I don't put certain stickers on the back of my truck, because I don't want to advertise certain things, right? I don't want to advertise. So those pictures that have, the stickers that have like the whole family, I don't want to let people know how many people there are in my family and that I have a dog, right? I don't want to necessarily put out there that maybe I support the NRA, because that might tell people I have guns, or, you know, maybe I am a so-and-so supporter, right? That might put me in a different category, you know, according to some people. So, you know, you got to be careful. There's always ways to make sure that you're, whatever you are saying out there is not saying the wrong thing to the wrong people, right? So definitely keep OPSEC or operational security always in mind. And again, that article is twowayradiotalk.com. And like always, I will link to these articles in the show notes, with so much more that you can go link to and you know, get a little bit more information about preparedness. Definitely always trying to help people stay prepared out there. Well, everyone, that's it for episode 274. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. With that, choose to live a more self-reliant life. Choose not to be so dependent on the government grid or the grind. Until tomorrow, stay prepped and aware. Peace.